Welcome to Today on Broadway for Monday, March 28th, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am James Marino from Broadway Stars. Let's get right to the headlines. Give us an update, Matt, on the Bright Star reviews.
Well, James, we kind of predicted it on Friday's episode when we talked about the lukewarm reviews that the new musical Bright Star had received at the time we recorded. But as happened with Disaster, The Gray Lady defied critical consensus, and Charles Isherwood gave the show a rave. He also gave it a rave back in 2014 when he reviewed the world premiere out at San Diego's Old Globe. Writing last week, Isherwood said, "The musical is gentle-spirited, not gaudy, and moves with an easygoing grace where others prance and strut." He continues, "While the story certainly skirts, if not embraces, sentimentality and the overripeness of melodrama, the production's soft-hued style and the sometimes wry tone of Mr. Martin's book keeps it from curdling into treacle. The songs boast simple but seductive melodies and lyrics that have a sweet homespun quality." So a lot of the other reviewers were lukewarm on it, didn't really love Bright Star, but the New York Times gave it a rave. So it's interesting to see how this is kind of becoming a trend this spring, and to kind of see how this is a case study for how much power a rave review in the New York Times still carries, what how much that still means. With Disaster, we've seen that the ticket sales didn't really get a bump from Isherwood's rave there. Bright Star, as we noted in last week's gross, has been struggling a little bit, so we'll have to watch and see if this review gives people permission to go out and buy a ticket to a show that they were all kind of on the fence for.
You know, I wonder, the Times used to send two reviewers to the shows. I wonder if Brantley's going to go see this or if he's going to skip it. So we'll have to see as the future progresses. I guess if Bright Star becomes a hit, I'm sure that Brantley will go see it. Whether he'll review it or not, it's another thing. So, Matt, have you been checking out Deadline Hollywood? Jeremy Gerard, who was a longtime theater writer at various outlets, is now writing what seemingly is a weekly column with Jordan Roth, the president of GGMSN. And they are talking about Nerds and Off-Broadway and different things like this. Are they the new Riedel?
Well, I don't know that I would ever want to put that label on anyone other than Michael Riedel himself, but it is. This is the second time that I think we've talked about it, and it's a Q&A back and forth where they kind of talk about different issues going on in theater. And like you said, this week they talk about the news that actually I first read in Riedel's column about some of the unpaid debts that the producers of Nerds are trying to figure out how to pay, and Carl Levin is the main producer on that. And Gerard and Roth kind of go back and forth and talk about the issues of that and the differences between producing on Broadway, producing off Broadway. They also do a little bit of reviewing of the off Broadway show, The Effect, which we talked about last week. You know, it's interesting to see these two articles, which both came out on Friday. There's a distinctive difference between the way that Riedel approaches the story and the direction that Gerard and Roth approach the story. Those of you familiar with either Jordan Roth or Michael Riedel can probably guess where their different perspectives come from. But it's good to have a fairly intelligent, astute observation of an issue that can really get into the weeds on the debts and who pays who and all that stuff. It's nice to have Jordan Roth, who knows the ins and outs of the business, kind of break it down a little bit and explain some of the details that we might not understand.
All right. Well, let's move forward. In the openings, I guess we're coming back to a Hamilton story.
Yeah, it's been a couple weeks or at least a week and a half or two since they were in D.C., since we had a really good Hamilton story, which is bordering on Broadway journalistic malpractice these days. But reports from the UK's Daily Mail suggest that Sir Cameron McIntosh is aiming to bring the musical to the West End sometime next year in 2017. The plan is for McIntosh to bring it into the Victoria Palace Theater, where Billy Elliot is currently playing, but has already scheduled a closing date of April 9th. So it's going to be dark here and within 2 weeks or so. And the plan is to bring Hamilton in sometime in 2017. Creator and star Lin-Manuel Miranda isn't tamping down the rumors either, saying, "We're hoping it will happen sooner rather than later. My wife is always trying to get me to other countries, so I would be honored to open the show in London." Now, anyone who knows Miranda's experience in the Heights knows that he went in and out of different companies around the country. He'd stop in tours. He did it in Puerto Rico. So this is one of those shows that I would not be surprised if you saw a large percentage of the original principal cast opening a potential West End run. You know, whether that's Chris Jackson, David Diggs, Renee Elise Goldsberry, Philippa Sue. I would not be surprised if a lot of them, after their contracts are up on Broadway, went over and opened in the West End, because the star power that this group has commanded would definitely help sell some tickets. And James, you've seen Hamilton and you've seen shows in the West End. Do you think that this would play differently in London than it did in New York?
I think it would. And we've touched upon it just briefly on This Week on Broadway. I'm not sure it's going to be the runaway hit in London that it is here, but certainly it's a very new and fresh take on the traditional musical. So that might take it further than the content itself. I don't know if the West End audience is as interested in the goings on of the creation of the United States of America. But then again, I've always said shows, some of my favorite television shows like The West Wing and ER and things like that are shows about relationships that just happen to be at the White House or just happen to be in the emergency room of a Chicago hospital. So maybe Hamilton is about the relationships and just happens to be set in there, and that'll be a hit. But if I had the answers, I'd be doing this from my yacht in the Caymans, you know?
Yeah, that sounds better than what we're doing now.
But it is pretty warm there in Florida today, isn't it?
It is. It's getting up to the upper 80s, so I won't rub that in too much on anybody else who's listening from the snow.
All right, October Sky, what's happening?
Yeah, the October Sky is a fairly new musical with a book by Pulitzer Prize and Tony winner Marsha Norman, also co-written on the book by Aaron Thalen, and Michael Mahler wrote the music. It's going to have its West Coast premiere at the Old Globe this fall, running September 10th through October 23rd. The musical played at Chicago's Marriott Theater last year and is based on a 1999 movie which told the true story of a West Virginia teenager who enters a rocketry contest against the wishes of his overbearing father at the height of the Cold War. So this is one of those that, again, with a really powerful name like Marsha Norman behind it and playing at some pretty big regional theaters, if the show keeps to continue to get better and continues to get good reviews, it could be one that we see in New York in a year or two.
Excellent. Give us a quick update on casting.
Yeah, it was announced on Friday that Paul Slade Smith will be taking over the role of Charles Frohman / Captain Hook in Broadway's Finding Neverland when the original and then current star Kelsey Grammer departs the show for the second time on April 3rd. Smith originated the roles of Mr. Henshaw and Nana in the show and has been understudying Frohman and Hook. So he's gone on dozens of times in the role. So this won't be anything that he's not familiar with, but it'll be a nice way to promote from within over at Finding Neverland.
Now, one of the hardest tickets on Broadway to get is Blackbird right now. So tell us about, will folks have a chance to see Blackbird in a different incarnation?
Yeah, well, Blackbird on Broadway is a limited run, but this is something that has been gestating for a while. And then, as I told you before we started airing, I didn't even know they'd started filming, but then it came out on Friday that the film adaptation of Blackbird, now titled Una, which is based on the female character, is already done filming. It is going to star Rooney Mara from The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and Carol, and Ben Mendelsohn, who was in the Place Beyond the Pines movie and also in Bloodline on Netflix with Norbert Leo Butts and Kyle Chandler and Sam Shepard. It is a film adaptation of the same source material, same story. So it'll be interesting to see how it differs from the stage version. Not any details about when it's going to come out, but it's one of those that, based on how successful and powerful it's been on stage, it's probably going to be one of those award bait movies that we see towards the end of each year.
All right. And the New York Post, Barbara Hoffman had a great story on the weirdest jobs on Broadway.
Yeah, this was really fun. It's one of those things that when we talk about all of the different things that go into making a Broadway show, we talk about not only the writers, but then the designers, the lighting, the sound, even, you know, dressers and makeup get some pub. But we don't often talk about the people who make the pies for something like Waitress, or the people who distress different clothing for period pieces, or something like Disaster, which has so much disaster that things need to look in different varying states of disarray throughout the show. And then shows like Fiddler on the Roof that have a religious advisor. So it's really interesting to kind of see what goes into making a show as authentic as humanly possible beyond what we normally consider the research that a playwright or a composer or lyricist would do. So that's an article that is a really good read, especially on the weekend when you got you know, some free time to really think about all the cool stuff that goes on behind the scenes on Broadway.
We'll have a link to that in the show notes as well. So if you want to check that out, you can get it there. You were talking about the Pies and Waitress, and I just wanted to mention that Waitress, I'm seeing, is getting a lot of pre-opening feature type of writing in media outlets that are not traditional Broadway outlets, like 538.com, which is a sports and politics website, talking about the all-female production crew that is pulling that in.
Yeah, 538 is one of my favorite sites. It's a data analytics site that was originally part was really its own thing, then in the last election cycle was part of the New York Times, and is now part of ESPN, where they branched into sports as well from a data side. But they have a feature on Waitress being the first all-female creative team of multiple people. As they note, Runaways was Runaways and Quilters were both female-led, but they were much smaller. But this one, as we talked about last week, is a four-woman creative team, and that's pulling in a lot of publicity. And also, I think it helps that Sarah Bareilles is a pop star that not only people know as a singer and songwriter, but with the success of her song Brave, which really in a lot of ways was turned into a female empowerment anthem. I think that endeared her to a lot of people outside of the normal community that would have known her kind of small indie music. And I think that's bringing a lot of attention to the show. And that's great, because anytime we can get people who might not be normally the ticket buyers for Broadway to go and see a show and open them up to what's so great about the theater that we love, That's a good thing. And I think this is one of those shows that's probably going to do very well in a season when there's so many new shows that some of them are getting squeezed out. I have a feeling this one is going to do very, very well.
And I think it's really smart by the production to be focusing on getting this out there, that it's an all-women creative team. Because as we see repeatedly in every study of ticket purchases on Broadway, 75% of all ticket purchases are made by women. Yeah. And that if you are getting this story out to magazines such as Marie Claire and 538, not typically geared towards women, I came upon it because they wrote an article that Gonzaga should never have been ranked 11th in the NCAAs. And they were like, and Waitress is making a Broadway history with an all-female creative team. And I was like, whoa, that's right next to it. So, but I think that it's really important that, that as you said, in this very crowded market right now with such great musicals coming to Broadway all at once in this the flurry of spring openings, that they are going to have non-traditional outlets focusing on the creative team from Waitress and getting their message out there, which is awesome.
Yeah, AKA has done a good job of getting that this storyline out there. And it actually plays really well into the original film Waitress, which was written and directed by Adrienne Shelley, and she actually co-starred in it. And it plays really nice in the fact that it was written originally by a woman, directed originally by a woman, and the Broadway incarnation is taking the same path.
So, Matt, why don't you get us out of here?
All right. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. I'm Matt Taman, and you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt. And don't forget to subscribe to Some Like It Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play.
And I am James Marino from BroadwayStars.com and BroadwayRadio.com. And thank you for taking a listen to us and sharing your Monday with us. We will see you tomorrow. Once again, we're sorry this podcast is so long. We didn't have time to make a shorter one.